on great radio stations all across America. It's The National Defense with Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry.
The National Defense is made possible by Ford. Go further. By The Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By Subway. Get the Subway footlong sub of the day for just $6. It's a different featured footlong every day of the week. The Subway $6 footlong sub of the day. At participating restaurants, extras additional plus tax, no additional discounts or coupons applied. By PenFed Credit Union. PenFed's got great rates for everyone. And by Sam's Club. Sam's Club is thanking those who serve. Active and former members of the U.S. military are invited to join or renew their membership with up to $25 gift cards simply for signing up. Join or renew today. See Club for details.
This is the National Defense, Randy Miller and Jerry Newberry. And Jerry, as always, our dedication.
Hey, this show's for you, the men and women serving in our military. It's for the millions of veterans out there, and it's for all their families. We're here for you. We love you. God bless you.
It's the 4th of July weekend, so we should be talking about patriots. And there's a great new book out about the story of Hollywood's greatest patriot. And you can't go into something like this about Jimmy Stewart. Well, I love Jimmy Stewart. You got to love Jimmy Stewart. Jimmy Stewart is, a lot of people don't know, well, you beloved actor, but also just one of the greatest patriots. Robert Mattson is the author of the best-selling book, Mission, Jimmy Stewart and the Fight for Europe, which sounds strange to a lot of people at first. But Robert, it's exactly the truth, isn't it?
It is. He was in the middle of World War II, on the front lines before D-Day, and yeah, he's a patriot and a hero.
Yeah, and it's interesting. We had on this show a few weeks ago, Steve Peck, the son of Gregory Peck, and Steve Peck is into projects now where he's interviewing veterans, but you know, he talks about his dad and talks about the service there, but you know, that was a different day, wasn't it? You know, when actors would step up and do the right thing for their country, and you don't hear so much about that anymore.
No, I've been asked often, you know, to compare Jim to somebody today, you know, an actor who might do something like that, and you really can't.
No.
It was a different time, but Jim also had a family mission, which is where the name of the book comes from. Mission is about his family mission to serve, and not too many people have that particular obligation like he did.
And so Jimmy Stewart died 20 years ago this weekend, so it's a very appropriate timing. And I didn't know this. He got into the Army 9 months before Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, he was in the first draft class before the war when it became obvious that America was going to have to go to war. He was in the lottery, and he picked, his number was 300, and so he considered it the only lottery he ever won.
Wow.
You know, how many people are drafted and go in to induction day with a big smile on his face, but that was him, that was Jim.
And so where was this now in connection to where his career was at the time?
He was on the way up. He had already made Mr. Smith Goes to Washington.
Wow.
Which is a tremendous classic still.
Sure.
And he had just won the Academy Award for The Philadelphia Story 1 month before he went into the service.
Can you imagine that? Can you imagine an actor today winning the Academy Award and then going off to war? I just cannot imagine that. And I think, according to your book, too, I guess he had to kind of fight with the government to go.
Yeah, they saw no upside to a Hollywood star serving in active combat, especially as a flyer. He could get shot down,
sure,
and either killed or worse, captured and put on newsreels in Germany. You know, how could that possibly play? So, you know, they did everything they could to keep him stateside.
Yeah, because they wanted him to do some commercial work or some messages, some public service messages about the war.
He had a dream assignment. He was told, you know, go to the motion picture unit at Wright Field in Dayton, Ohio, and you spend the war there making recruiting films and training films.
Right.
And he said no.
You know, and it's so interesting that a lot of people don't know that about Jimmy Stewart. And your book not only chronicles how he wanted to do that, but he was good at it. He earned 2 Distinguished Flying Crosses for action over Germany. But he didn't talk about it a lot, did he, to his family even?
No. Once you read the book, you'll understand why he didn't, because he saw horrific things.
Yeah.
You know, he was He was in the thick of the air war when Germany still had a very strong air force and a very strong defense. And he, a lot of the men in his command, and he was a commander because he was older than a lot of the guys, but he was a by-the-book, very disciplined flyer. So he was the one writing letters home. He was the one seeing his men get shot down around him. He should have been shot down, but wasn't, luckily. But he brought all that home with him and just kept it inside for the rest of his life.
Well, and you know, you talk about PTSD, and at the time, what was the term, flak happy?
Yeah, he went flak happy more than once. I document the mission that sent him over the edge, and it would send anybody over the edge.
Sure. And so, but when he got back from war, he went back to Hollywood with all of these issues with PTSD. How did that affect his career?
He thought he was done. There is a before and after picture in the book that shows what he looked like in 1942 and what he looked like after 12 combat missions 2 years later.
Wow.
And he looked so much older. He was haggard. The skin was hanging off of him. And when he got back to Hollywood, he knew he looked older. And Henry Fonda, his best friend, looked at him and said, "What the hell happened to you?"
How old was Jimmy Stewart when he went in?
He was 33 when he went in, so he was 38 when he came out, and he looked 48, 50.
Wow.
And he thought his career was over, and in fact, the phone did not ring until Frank Capra called with It's a Wonderful Life. And even then, Jim didn't want to do it because he wanted to make a comedy, and It's a Wonderful Life is many things, but it's really not a comedy.
Right, exactly. Well, and it was a great reflection of him at the time, and I'm sure that that kind of helped him in preparing for the role. But was there any kind of blowback from Hollywood in terms of his going to war and kind of going against the grain of what everybody else was doing?
Well, there was, because he was a contract player. He was an MGM player, and Louis B. Mayer sort of said, "You are forbidden to go into the service." Hmm. And Jim said, "Yeah, right," and went into the service.
Wow.
And then Mayer worked behind the scenes with the War Department in Washington to make sure that Jim stayed stateside. So Jim was fighting a two-front war, not only with Washington to the east, but with Hollywood to the west.
And I guess, you know, his daughter was very instrumental. We're talking to Robert Mattson. He's the author of the best-selling book, Mission, Jimmy Stewart and the Fight for Europe. And his daughter was very positive about this book.
Yeah, I was so gratified. I really stayed away from the family when I wrote it because the timeline ends in 1946, and Jim didn't even get married till 1949. So, but when I had a manuscript that was completed and I sent the galleys to Kelly Stewart as the family representative, and I waited, you know, is she going to like it? And she wrote back and said she thanked me for giving this glimpse of what their father had been through because they had no idea. He just wouldn't talk about it.
Well, so what kind of field research did you do for this book?
There were lots and lots of hours spent looking at the combat mission reports from the U.S. Army Air Force's records in D.C., lots of discussions with veterans who served with Jim, who are still around. You know, that was a tough group that flew over Germany,
yeah.
I'll tell you.
Yeah.
I went to Tibbenham, England, where his base was, so I could see, you know, where his barracks were, where the flight line was, where the runways. I went up in B-24s. I mean, I did everything I could to try to get into his world.
So when he got back to Hollywood then, I mean, that was followed by a pretty good string of pictures after that, right?
Yeah, I mean, It's a Wonderful Life. He opened his eyes. You know, he didn't have to do comedy. He could do anything.
Yeah.
And part of the new skill set that he had was all the dark things that he had seen. So he brought, like, an edge to a lot of his performances that he just didn't have before the war. And so he's making Winchester 73 and the FBI story and, you know, Vertigo.
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, a string of really Hitchcock things. And things where he could show this rage that he had inside of him. His wife talked about the rage that you would never expect out of Jimmy Stewart, but it was blind. It would come out of nowhere, and it was because of the war.
Hey, hang on just a second. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back right here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by United Airlines, proud to employ veterans across our entire airline, and by CVS and the CVS Minute Clinics, the cure for the common weight.
Robert Mattson is the author of the best-selling book, Mission, Jimmy Stewart and the Fight for Europe. So Jimmy Stewart has just won an Academy Award, and he goes into the war, and all these guys that he's serving with, how do they treat him? And I could certainly understand from what you're saying about him, he did not want any kind of preferential treatment, obviously, but it's Jimmy Stewart, right?
Right. Yeah, he could not escape it. And like Clark Gable played that up when he entered the service, and he was also in the Army Air Forces. He became like this, you know, celebrity, and he would make entrances and score with women. And Jim wanted none of that. He just wanted to serve, and he stayed behind perimeters always and would not talk to the press. But he had generals. So he's a captain. He's got generals coming, you know, to, hey, have dinner with me. And so
right.
It's his obligation to hang out with the brass, and it's something that he smiled. He grinned and bore it, you know. That was his approach to it. He knew he had to do it, and it helped him on a number of occasions. He got into combat because he was Jimmy Stewart.
Well, and if you're serving with Jimmy Stewart and you need something for your unit, don't you say, hey, Jimmy, can you talk to the general? Can you see what you can do?
Yeah, you know, I had, honestly, in all of my interviews and all my research, I never thought of that, but you're absolutely right.
I mean, they had to be, you know, dependent upon and strongly knew that if Jimmy Stewart asked for something, there's a good chance it's going to happen.
Yeah, even at whatever rank he was an influencer with the top brass, absolutely.
But yet, when you interviewed the men that he served with, were they pretty much on the same level in terms of what they were doing?
Well, the flyers that I interviewed were in Jim's squadron or in Jim's bomb group, and they all talked about what a great guy he was. And he was a by-the-book flyer, but he wasn't, you know, he wasn't Patton. He was a very low-key leader. He led by example. He led with confidence. He led with, you know, fly by the book. They thought he was a great guy, but he was acting that whole time, you know. It's too easy to say he was a great guy. He was a very private man. He didn't like people that much. He didn't like to talk. But he acted his way through the war, really, and became like a textbook leader because he was smart enough and mature enough to know that's what the men around him needed.
Well, yeah, that's amazing, because when you talk about Jimmy Stewart as a by-the-book pilot, I just can't even imagine that, you know, just from the roles that he had. And he's always kind of the shy guy, and, you know, a little clumsy, and so to hear that, that's pretty amazing. It's almost like he had two different lives.
Yeah, there were two sides to him, and just don't screw up. You know, if you screw up, you are going to hear about it. He would really let fly with men who made errors that might cost lives. He was never ever going to suffer that even once.
Wow, what a great book! What a great story that. You know, the majority of people in America do not know about. It's called Mission, Jimmy Stewart and the Fight for Europe. Robert Mattson is the author. And Robert, you know, it almost sounds like it could be a movie, right?
It's funny you say that because, you know, Hollywood has come calling on this.
And, I'll bet.
We've had some discussions. We'll just have to see where it goes.
And Tom Hanks is going to play Jimmy Stewart?
Wouldn't that be something?
That'd be cool. I can see that happening. Well, good luck with the book, man. Thank you so much for the time today, and have a great 4th of July weekend.
Thank you. Same to you. It was a lot of fun.
We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
The National Defense is made possible by ADT Security. For over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Hilton Hotels. With over 10,000 veterans and military spouses hired in the last 3 years, Hilton offers a world of opportunity. Visit jobs.hilton.com/military.
Welcome into the National Defense. It's Randy Miller, and we are so honored. This is great. You know, you talk about kicking off your 4th of July weekend. I mean, when you have the man on, and I'm talking about the man of the VA, Secretary of the VA, David Shulkin, is with us. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, I'm glad to be here, and I hope everyone's having a great weekend.
Yeah, you know, I want to, first of all, congratulations on the post. We had your predecessor, Bob McDonald, on this program a few times, and it's always good to hear directly from the secretary about what's happening in the VA, and especially for our audience of active duty military and veterans and their families. And let's start a little, just for the people that don't know, about your background just a little bit. You're not new to the VA at all. You're the Undersecretary of Health under the Obama administration. And now as secretary, you're the only Trump appointee to be confirmed unanimously. So that must mean that you get along with everybody. Is that right?
Well, I think what it really means is that the American public and our elected officials treat veterans' issues in a bipartisan way. And if there's anything that the country agrees upon, it's that we have to do better for our veterans and we have to fix the VA. And that's what I hope the unanimous support for my confirmation was about.
But it's not a job that everybody's, you know, lining up to do, right? to fix the VA.
Well, I think everyone understands that this is a system that has had years, if not decades, of neglect that has really spanned multiple administrations. And now it really is time to address these issues and to make sure that we fix the VA. And that's not going to be easy, but I think that everyone understands that that's really what has to be done now.
Yeah, and I want to say from my perspective, too, because our home base here is in Kansas City, Missouri, where Cerner Medical is one of the chief employers of this area. And you did something that I am, I just can't believe. It's such a common sense move that maybe should have been done a long time ago. But Cerner is this gigantic medical and electronic health record organization that already had a contract with DOD, and they had already gotten started on a system. And you said, listen, we need to overhaul what the VA is doing as far as electronic medical records. And without taking bids, without the regular rigmarole and taking 5 years to get something done, you said, why don't we just connect the two systems and let Cerner as the only operator? That was brilliant.
Well, I think it is common sense. We know where our customers are going to come from, and they're going to come from the Department of Defense, and they have a record system, and we have a separate one. And what we really want to do is make sure that we take care of veterans from the time that they enlist all the way through end-of-life care. And the only way to do it is to share a system. And I think it's going to make care better for veterans. It's going to be savings for the taxpayers. And I think that it's something that probably should have been done a long time ago.
And let the people who know what they're doing do it, right? I mean,
Yes. The
VA is not in the business of creating technology systems for health records. And you recognize that. I know you've got your background is in healthcare management, so that was probably something that was kind of eating at you for a while to get something done with that.
Yeah, I think every organization has to recognize what its core competencies are, and I didn't think that being in the software business was a core competency for VA, and yeah. I had said quite a while ago when I first became secretary that I was committed to letting people who focus on things like technology companies do that for VA and let VA focus on the things it knows how to do for veterans.
So we put out a little call, and we're talking to VA Secretary David Shulkin. We put out a call. We work with about 12 different veteran service organizations and had them email some questions they'd like to have answered. One that kept coming up was about the CHOICE program being overhauled and renamed and expanded. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Well, one of the commitments that the president had when he ran, and certainly that he has now, is to make sure that our veterans have more choice. And that means that what we're trying to do is to allow veterans to get the best care that's available to them. Often, and we hear this consistently, when veterans get into the VA system, that's where they prefer their care. That's where actually the data from independent studies have shown the quality is higher in the VA than on average in the private sector. But there are times that the private sector does a better job. And so we want to give veterans the best of both worlds. And the revamping of the CHOICE program is to allow veterans to have greater choice.
Yeah, again, just a very common sense move. And I don't think maybe a lot of people don't understand, especially civilians, don't understand that the VA I mean, you talk about extraordinary care and some innovative technologies. The VA has developed many of the medical technologies that were sent out into the private sector, right?
Well, absolutely. The first liver transplant was done in the VA, the cardiac defibrillator, the pacemaker, the CAT scan that everyone uses was developed, that science was developed in the VA, the nicotine patch. Many of the things that Americans rely upon were first developed in the VA, and it continues to lead in innovation, has one of the highest number of new patents and publications of any organization in America today.
That's pretty incredible. Can you update us on the compensation discussions with the Agent Orange exposures, such as hypertension?
Yeah, we have taken a hard look at many of what we call presumptives, allowing us to be able to more easily recognize disabilities associated with exposure to agents like Agent Orange, and we have continued to follow where the science suggests that we should add to those presumptives, and we've made recommendations to add to a number of additional conditions that we believe are associated with exposure to Agent Orange, and those essentially are working their way through the regulatory process.
That's going to take a while. We're talking with VA Secretary David Shulkin, but at least you're looking at that, you know, and those, I think some of the things that I think that's what I hear from veterans and their families are, we know that there's not going to be an immediate answer to everything. But as long as you're looking into it, as long as you're heading that way, is that kind of the sense you get from veterans that, hey, at least you're hearing me?
Well, I certainly want veterans to understand that about the VA. That's the reason we're here, and we're here to advocate on behalf of veterans. It doesn't mean that they always get the answer that they're looking for, but it's my job to make sure that we are focused on doing the right thing, that we're following what the science tells us, that we're constantly making our services easier to use and timelier. So hopefully veterans understand that we are an organization that is focused on helping them and helping them get and enjoy life the way that we believe our veterans should.
And on that subject, too, you know, especially with your background in healthcare management, what more can be done about preventative care to intervene and to just be more proactive in seeing veterans taking care of themselves and managing their own health?
Well, we're a big believer in the VA in having a team of healthcare professionals work to assure prevention, to do early assessment and treatment of conditions, to make sure that we're dealing with the whole person, so that means the physical and the emotional concerns of veterans. And our teams, which often start with a primary care physician but involve nurses and pharmacists and social workers and physical therapists and others, are really there to make sure that we implement that whole health model of care that you often don't get a chance to see out in the private sector.
You know, and just to give gives folks an idea about David Shulkin, when you were the undersecretary, you left the private sector and you were named as undersecretary, and your staff told you it would take 10 months to organize a summit on combat veteran suicides. You told them that the wait would cost 6,000 lives and to get it done in a month, which they then did.
Yeah.
I mean, that tells me a couple of things. That tells me about your agenda and tells you, it should have told you too, that these things can be accomplished in a lot less time than what was originally forecast, right?
Yeah, I'm not particularly known as a very patient person.
But, that's good.
You know, when it comes to making a difference for our veterans, and sometimes, as in that case, I think that these are life and death decisions. Yep. There's no reason why we should wait. Right. So I'm instilling that sense of urgency in the organization.
You know, we just talked to somebody today on the program from Columbia University. A lot of programs that are involved in, you know, what to do about PTSD, and they've got an equine therapy program there at Columbia that they're working with veterans and horses and finding it very successful. What's your feeling on those kind of programs and, you know, different ways to tackle things like PTSD?
Well, I'm very open to looking at those types of programs. I do know that the VA does support equine therapy programs. I'm surprised that Columbia University, that's in New York City, is working with them. But,
well, yeah,
but,
me too.
Everything, I guess, happens in New York City. But, you know, we've found success so far with other types of animals. Service dogs, for example, I think can have a big impact. But we're looking at large numbers of what I would call complementary or integrative therapies that can help in PTSD. We're looking at new research that's come out with transcendental meditation that shows that it has a big impact. And, of course, we have very experienced use of traditional therapies in PTSD, prolonged exposure, and cognitive behavioral therapy. So when you come to VA, you're offered a menu of opportunities, a menu of therapies, because the same thing doesn't work for everybody, and
right.
It's our job to personalize and to tailor the therapy depending upon the preferences and the impact on our individual veterans.
So, you know, we had your predecessor, Bob McDonald, on this program on a semi-regular basis, and I think it's so important for the active duty troops. We're on American Forces Network and then 145 stations here in the United States. And I think it's very important for the active duty troops, for veterans and their families to hear from the head of the VA from time to time. And I would just like to extend that invitation as a kind of a, whether it's, you know, once every 3 months, something like that, to have you on, kind of update us in terms of what's going on at the VA and to talk about any kind of new innovative things you guys are doing.
Well, thank you. I think that's very important. I want our active duty service members to know how much we appreciate what they're doing, particularly on this important weekend, and let them know that we're working hard to make sure that there's going to be a system there for them when and if they need us to meet their needs, and that we're working every day to make this a stronger system and a system that they'll be proud to want to use.
So what is the Secretary of the VA doing on a 4th of July weekend?
Well, I'm going to be pretty busy. I'm going to be at the Capitol for the national concert on the Capitol lawn, and I'll be at the White House at Military Appreciation Day, where we have a chance to celebrate with our military and their families at the White House with the president.
Boy, you made me feel bad. I'm just having brats.
Hey, okay.
Mr. Secretary, thank you so much. I really appreciate the time, and I hope to talk to you on a regular basis.
Thanks so much.
Thank you
bye
so
bye
much.
Now.
David Shulkin right here in the program. We'll be right back here on the National Defense.
Trying to keep my eyes from closing.
Whoa. Hey, welcome back to the National Defense. You know, it's time for the CVS Minute Clinic Minute. And Holly Kautz is with us, Army veteran and Minute Clinic nurse practitioner. Holly, it's summer. Let's talk about poison ivy and poison oak. If you've been exposed, what do you do?
Sure. Well, you know, as the summer or as the weather starts to get nicer, people tend to be out more doing yard work and gardening, and it certainly can lead to some exposure to these plants. And so if you have a mild case, sometimes you can get away with just doing some cold compresses, some lotions, and some oatmeal baths.
I remember the oatmeal baths. Yeah, remember those.
Calamana lotion.
Yeah, well, yeah. That's
you're going to need a lotion.
Calamana lotion.
But I'll tell you, one thing I want to point out is every time you're exposed, your next exposure is probably going to be worse. And so if you're not able to take care of it that way, come see us at the Minute Clinic. There are some prescription medications we can help you with to give you some more relief and help you recover.
Is calamine lotion, is that still used a lot?
It is. I mean, it can kind of help, just kind of soothes the skin, helps a little bit with the itching. But again, that's more for a mild case. To get into a more severe case, you need some topical corticosteroids, and often you need prescriptions.
Glad you said
that.
My mom used calamine lotion for everything.
Yeah,
I mean, seriously.
Yeah.
And it tastes horrible.
Yeah.
But anyway.
You're not supposed to eat it.
Oh, that's right. The Minute Clinic is the way to go. We'll be back next week with a brand new Minute Clinic Minute right here on the National Defense.
Of you and me, driving across country. just the road and its majesty. And I'm looking at you with the world in the rear view. You were blazing me.
This has been the National Defense, made possible by Ford. Go further. By the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. By Subway. Get the Subway footlong sub of the day for just $6. It's a different featured footlong every day of the week. The Subway $6 footlong sub of the day. At participating restaurants, extras additional plus tax, no additional discounts or coupons apply. By PenFed Credit Union. PenFed's got great rates for everyone. By United Airlines, proud to employ veterans across our entire airline. By CVS and the CVS Minute Clinics, the cure for the common wait. By ADT Security, for over 140 years, your first line of defense. And by Sam's Club. Sam's Club is thanking those who serve. Active and former members of the U.S. military are invited to join or renew their membership with up to $25 gift cards simply for signing up. Join or renew today. See Club for details.